You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. President Donald Trump was sworn in 1 week ago today, and in that short time, there is a lot to unpack. In the initial hours of becoming president, Trump signed a slew of executive orders that are dismantling national policies supported by the Biden administration. Today, we're going to dive into the executive order surrounding gender and that the federal government will now only recognize sexes assigned at birth, male and female. That's different from gender identity, which is defined as how one self-identifies as male, female, or non-binary, which is someone who uses they-them pronouns, for example. For the past couple years under the Biden administration, a person could select their gender identity on federal documents like passports and Social Security cards, even allowing people to select the letter X as a gender if they're non-binary. Under Trump, all of that comes to an end. And that makes things kind of complicated in states like California, which allows gender identity in state documents like a driver's license. So we're going to spend some time understanding how this impacts trans and non-binary people in our community. Joining me is Cap Radio reporter Shrishti Prabha, who uses they-them pronouns. Alexis Sanchez is with the Sacramento LGBT Center. And Larry Levine is the Associate Dean for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, DEI, at McGeorge School of Law. And he'll also weigh in on Trump's executive actions rolling back federal DEI policies. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vicky.
Professor Levine, I want to start with you. I just touched upon it, but I do think it's important to start with walking through some of the specifics of this executive order. It's titled Defending Women from Gender Ideology Extremism and Restoring Biological Truth to the Federal Government. Why this title? How does it work?
Wow. I can't believe it's only been a week. It's been quite a week. So where do we start? First of all, the naming says a lot. It really shows the agenda that the administration has. The new administration is really, in essence, trying to eradicate protections for trans folks and intersex folks and gender nonconforming individuals and trying to adhere to some sex binary that just doesn't fit all Americans. And so it's an effort to really take us back in a way. We're not sure how far back because some of it is still in process, but it's certainly going to be steps that are going to put people's lives actually in jeopardy and create enormous amounts of confusion.
What are some of the legal arguments within this executive order that the Trump administration is using to support this executive action?
It's very bizarre. It's really quite bizarre in a variety of ways. So, for example, when it defines sex, it says female is a person belonging at conception to a sex that produced a large reproductive cell. And men, similarly, at conception, have a small reproductive cell. It's just such an odd language. And it's trying to really push back against things that his own Supreme Court did. His own Supreme Court, a justice that he appointed, Justice Gorsuch, determined that statutorily, at least, the concept of sex includes gender identity and sexual orientation. And this is an effort to really push back against that.
Mm-hmm. This is already being challenged at the national level. I don't think that comes as a surprise. Here in California, Attorney General Rob Bonta, he released a statement on Friday saying in part that there are a myriad of state laws that already exist. They're on the books that protect LGBTQ+ rights and that the U.S. Constitution, as well as the Supreme Court, as you mentioned, have recognized that discrimination against LGBTQ+ people is unlawful. How do you envision the legal road going when you have states like California, as well as organizations as well, challenging this executive order on the national level?
There will be lots of litigation, like a full employment act for lawyers, because there will be so much, as there was in his first term when he tried these sorts of things and was stopped regularly by the courts and often by judges that he himself appointed. There already is a lawsuit. For example, he's trying to put an end to allowing trans women to be placed with women in federal prisons. And there's already a lawsuit filed against that. And there's a lot of very strong constitutional arguments that that law is invalid. So he can pronounce these things, but what will happen will be up to the courts and the legislature, because we do have separation of powers.
Well, as a legal battle ensues, the lives of people who are directly impacted remain in limbo. Alexis, you're the director of advocacy at the Sacramento LGBT Center. What conversations have you been having over the past week?
Yeah, so we've seen a lot of fear and confusion since Monday, and I think that's a lot of what these executive orders were intending to do, right? To stoke fear in the community. I think across a number of different executive orders within the LGBT community. Here at the center, we've gotten a lot of questions where folks reach out to me or the department, and they want to know, like, what does this mean for my state documents? If I was in process with a passport, what does this mean for me? What are kind of next steps? I've had to answer a lot of questions from folks who are maybe scared that the administration is going to start seizing documents. And then we're starting to hear some of the impacts of folks who are maybe, unable to get that passport and maybe had some travel scheduled and are having to rethink that.
How are you advising people during this time, trans and non-binary people in our community who are calling you asking for advice?
Yeah, so it's really challenging because it is, as the professor kind of mentioned, right? Like, we don't really know what the impacts are, right? We try to give the community as much information as we can, but executive orders oftentimes don't come with implementation plans in place. They don't come with guidelines. So what we then start to see is a trickle down from different federal departments. So I think on Thursday or Friday, we got the State Department saying that they were going to no longer issue X markers on their passports. So then us as a center, we can start to give more specific direction to community members to say, like, hey, like, you can still change your driver's license. You can still change your state birth certificate. These are all the documents that you can still change. But these, on the other hand, we don't really know. You are not able to do them now, and we don't know when you're going to be able to do them again.
Mm. Well, Srishti, of course, you're a reporter here. You've been on Insight many a time, so you have a journalistic eye. But you've also been directly impacted by this executive order. What are you comfortable sharing?
Well, I think it's important to start with why I changed it first, right? I felt empowered enough to actually change my gender marker to X, both on my passport and on my ID. So I was a little bit ahead of, this was a while back, and I was very excited. It makes me feel very, it makes me feel like I am living my most authentic life. I feel like everything aligns, all my documentation aligns. I feel like if someone has a question, they can ask, but I feel very comfortable in saying, I'm non-binary. And this is like, I don't know how to explain the sense of joy that you get from just getting to be who you are. And obviously, I don't want to change it. And so hearing the executive order, my questions kind of started to be around travel, which is what Alexis is kind of saying, like, will I be targeted for my gender marker? Like, if I go to a bar, will that be something that I have to think about if someone sees my ID? And actually, people don't really talk about it, but after I changed my passport with the X marker, I was actually getting detained more frequently in international travels. It was happening quite often. I'm also brown, so can I attribute it just to the X marker? I don't know, but I do think that that played a huge role because people would ask me specifically about that and what that meant. And I think because it doesn't really convey in the same way in other countries, there's a lot of confusion. And now it's not even legal, really. So I think I don't know what I have to do. And that's actually where I started. And I was upset, but I was like, what are solutions or what are things or can I feel good about where I'm at? And as a reporter, my immediate instinct is always to follow the story. So I actually reached out to Alexis or the SAC LGBTQ Center as a resource for others, but also for myself to find out what it is that we have to do, knowing that now this could impact my life. And it's a pretty heavy story. It directly impacts me. I don't feel great about having to report it, but I hope it helps others as we continue with the conversation today and also when I complete my own version of the story.
Yeah, and that's why these roundtables are so important. Professor Levine, with your background in law, if someone currently has an X on their passport or is using a gender that is different from their assigned sex at birth, what should they do? What advice would you have for them today?
One of the struggles, as people have pointed out, is there's this uncertainty. So, for example, yes, you can't use an X marker any longer on your passport, but it's unclear how far they're going to go. So, for example, are they going to really adhere to this preliminary executive order that says you're going to have to use the sex assigned at birth, no matter how discongruent it is with who you are and how you present, which raises so many risks to people who will be traveling with documentation that doesn't fit their appearance, that the potential consequences that have already been alluded to are just so enormous and so cruel. And that's the you know, beyond the law, just the cruelty that underlies this is hard to fathom. There will be litigation during the first Trump administration. A wonderful organization called Lambda Legal brought a successful action on behalf of someone who was intersex without clear sex at birth, and they won when the effort was made that to deny them the opportunity to have a passport that was non-binary. So we'll see. Hmm. We'll see.
Alexis, this goes beyond IDs and documents, of course. And given you are a leader at the Sacramento LGBTQ Center, what are the deeper consequences to this executive order that you'd like people to better understand?
Yeah, so prior to this executive order, transgender people were more likely to experience housing discrimination, experience discrimination in employment, just not have access to the tools and opportunities to be able to thrive. This executive order is just going to make it all that much more difficult, right? Like advocates did a study of over 50,000 transgender people, and I think in that study they found that transgender people were 6 times more likely to experience employment discrimination, and I think things like that will only get worse, right? Sometimes we tend to take for granted all the places we use our ID during the day. If I'm applying for an apartment, I have to share my documents. If I'm applying for a gym membership, I have to share my documents. When I'm looking for a job, I have to share my documents, and these are all important avenues to stay healthy, to be able to thrive in a community. So access to these things will be even further limited for people whose documentation doesn't match. And I like to also talk about this within the context of immigration, right? I think there are individuals now who are maybe people, transgender people of color, who are more likely to be detained, who will be in a situation where their state ID doesn't match, their birth certificate doesn't match their federal paperwork, and that puts them more likely at higher risk of detention.
Shrishti, you mentioned you talked with Alexis because you're compiling your own reporting, but who else did you talk to that you would like people to better understand?
Yeah, I've talked to a number of people. I've connected with the chair of the California Assembly's LGBTQ Caucus, Christopher Ward, the executive director of the Gender Health Center in SAC, Dr. Malachi Cote, the community member who identifies as non-binary male and has an X gender marker on their California ID, and Republican Assembly member Carl DeMaio, who is openly gay. I think, you know, Alexis and Professor Levine have both mentioned this enforcement has caused a lot of confusion. How it's implemented is unclear, and what it means for when you're traveling is also unclear. The intersectionalities of identities and how that links to your, you know, sexual gender marker or whatever, any marker, is complicated. And when talking to Dr. Malachi Cote from the Gender Health Center, we talked about gender minority stressors, and gender minority stressors are often things that are contextual but outside of us. So responding to how oppression operates and that stress level goes up because you're expected to conform in a very specific way that doesn't necessarily align with who you are. And so a policy like this is definitely going to start, you know, increasing those stressors. I also talked about protests because I was thinking about, you know, when Trump was elected last election cycle, we saw a lot of protests. We saw people in the streets. We saw LGBTQ community really coming out, you know, in droves. And this time it's been a little bit quieter. I'm not saying people aren't protesting, just like quieter in general. And I was, you know, why is that? And Dr. Cote said something that I really, you know, thought was very insightful, is that protests can look different and protests can look like a march and going to the Capitol, but it can also look like movement and dance and community and connecting and showing up and just being beautiful and queer and trans. And so that is a form of protest, of course, and it's a resistance to oppression. And I think, you know, places like the SAC LGBTQ Center and the Gender Health Center are providing those types of spaces for community right now, and that can actually be a really great access for support. Assemblymember Ward talked about how, you know, the Trump administration's federal actions, how that might impact reproductive rights and medical care for LGBTQ individuals like Medicare, which comes from federal dollars, and also access to gender-affirming care. Also protections for doctors who are performing those gender-affirming care processes. So that was one thing that they're looking at a policy level in California. They're also thinking about youth and educational policies, because we've talked about, you know, on InSight gender notification policies and the Safety Act, which are two things that are, you know, allowing young people to live their version of what they believe is their sexuality or gender. What Assemblymember Ward also mentioned was that right now there are a lot of legal protections in place, which I think Professor Levine and Alexis can talk a little more deeply about. But those are just some of the things that we have to think about. And that's a lot of things what I just said. So,
yeah. I mean, yeah, because it's not, this doesn't exist in a vacuum, you know, so there's a lot of ripple effects to an executive order. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about President Trump's executive order surrounding gender, and that the federal government will now only recognize sex as assigned at birth, male and female. Professor Levine, there are people who support this executive order who think that this is the right step. From a legal point of view, is there an avenue that this could actually be cemented?
Yes. The judiciary has a huge role to play. And now President Trump in a second term will get to appoint a bunch of judges. And he had this incredible opportunity to appoint three justices on the Supreme Court. And so it will depend, ultimately it's going to depend on the United States Supreme Court to decide what equal protection of the laws means in our society, in our country, under our Constitution. Transgender folks and non-binary folks are entitled to constitutional protection just like everyone else. How far that will go is going to be litigated. There's going to be so much. And yes, California has broad protections, and it'll be really interesting to see, for those who often advocate states' rights as the basis, suddenly I think they're going to be very active trying to challenge California and states like it in trying to say, well, we'll give you federal funds, but here, you know, here's what you've got to do. If you want these federal funds or, you know, put other restrictions. And finally, I'll mention that the efforts to define religious liberty so broadly that bigotry falls within this religious liberty moniker might enable people to discriminate in a way that we right now can't fathom.
Shashi, have you talked to people in your reporting that support this executive order?
Yes, I have. It's a job of a reporter to talk to all sides of this argument. So, I talked to Assemblymember Carl DeMaio, who is new to the state capitol. He's a Republican that was elected in November with a district in San Diego. He's a conservative. I believe he's been on Insight before, speaking about Reform California, which is a political action committee taking back California from the left. So I spoke to him, and I was trying to understand what is the Republican angle with this executive order. And from what I got from Assemblymember DeMaio was that, you know, these legislators are kind of focused on the fact that girls' sports would be impacted, that gender notification policies should exist. But what was interesting to me was all of this was about youth. And, you know, I asked Assemblymember DeMaio, well, this is, you know, the people being impacted by this two-gender executive order are people like me. I didn't say like me, but I said, you know, people that are, you know, adults. How do they play into this? And he's mentioned something about, you know, respecting the law. I will quote him. He said, you know, what he would say to people that this is a small minority issue. A super majority of California recognizes that there are two genders and that we should not allow biological males, for example, to unfairly compete in girls' sports. At the end of the day, that is what the majority opinion is. Just basic common sense. You have both dignity and respect for transgender individuals. Hmm. And this is actually used to advance a radical political agenda, and that they're using it to instill fear in people's hearts and division for political advantage. I mean, you can sit with that a little bit.
Well, then I'll leave the last word for Alexis mm-hmm. then. I mean, you just heard that I would imagine that you disagree with. In the last 30 seconds or so that we have, what do you want people to take away from this conversation?
Yeah, I think all Californians deserve a right to thrive, right? Whether we're talking about sports and participation in sports and trans youth's ability to play with their friends, which is trying to be litigated against, the opportunity for trans people to be able to go to the gym, to apply for a job, to have a nice apartment, all of these things are at risk, right? And I think transgender people may make up a small minority, but oftentimes they're a very marginalized minority, right? So I think I'd love for folks to just kind of show up and show out for their trans community and, you know, try and support in the face of a lot of fear and division right now.
Well, Alexis, Srishti, and Professor Levine, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Vicky.
That is Cap Radio reporter Srishti Prabha. Alexis Sanchez is with the Sacramento LGBT Center. And Larry Levine is the Associate Dean for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at McGeorge School of Law. And we've been discussing President Trump's executive actions on gender and how it's impacting people here at home. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.